Now it's time to get back to the second hour of KSCO Presents, the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO Presents, the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Welcome back to the show, folks. Yes, in the studio with us, we have Ethan Summers and Anne-Marie Napoli.
Napoli.
Thank you.
Napoli. Probably from Naples at some point in the distant past.
It's the plural for nap.
Could you speak up to the mic when
you
say
gotta
that?
Yeah, you got to get really close here.
Get close.
Yeah, that's plural for nap.
Nap. I see.
It's like a pod of maps.
It's Naples.
Yes, like in Italy. God, okay, easy to remember.
A place where they like to sleep a lot in the hot afternoon.
Yes.
Okay.
So we've known you guys because you opened up a center downtown Santa Cruz last year called Hub X, which was kind of a very interesting idea for dropping in and learning about virtual reality and augmented reality and related new media.
Cool club for the cool kids.
Yeah. I've noticed that you're also involved with something called Almost Human. Almost Human Media. Could you explain that to us? What do you mean by that?
Sure. Hello, world.
That sounds good.
Okay, so yeah. Almost Human. The story is that we come out of visual effects. We'd been doing that for a long time.
And down in L.A.?
Down in L.A. and other places, Japan and Mexico. And every time you go see the films and you see the Paramount logo or the Lionsgate logo, we did a lot of those. And we actually were lucky enough to pick up an Emmy in 2011 for recreating Gettysburg for a documentary called Gettysburg.
Really? And, you mean like the battlefield?
The battlefield, yeah. It actually recreated Gettysburg in 1863 and used satellite overhead maps to pull the elevations from and then recreate the, there's so many Civil War buffs around who are just maniac about this stuff that every detail of the landscape was recorded down to the fence post and idle chicken.
Wow.
And so you could take those maps and overlay them on top of satellite imagery, and you get essentially an exact two-dimensional recreation of Gettysburg. And what we did is we brought it into three dimensions.
Wow. And you did that for a documentary on Gettysburg?
Or it was a documentary by Ridley Scott, you know, the alien dude.
The guy with the budgets.
Yeah, the guy with large amounts of money, yes.
Right.
And it was fun. Other than that, I really can't remember. But okay, so Almost Human, that's right.
Yeah, so you moved to Santa Cruz from, I know, what brought you here to Santa Cruz after having a successful media career in L.A., which is where you're supposed to go when you're doing big media?
Well, actually, we were living in Mexico.
Oh,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're just, the money was coming from L.A.
Well, yeah, we were running drugs. And so after Mexico, we came here.
I know you mean aspirin.
Yeah.
Because my father was in his decrepitude days, and so we came back and we cared for him. And we said, why not? We're here. Let's start a company, as we usually do.
Wow, so your dad was in Santa Cruz, and he was...
Yeah. He was an old Santa Cruz curmudgeon, somewhat of a famous artist. Carol Summers. He was a printer, woodblock printer.
Wow.
Anyway, not to get carried away on the father thing.
We lived in Santa Cruz for a number of years, but we left to live in Mexico for 7 years, which we started to live for 1 year, but it ended up being seven.
7 years, wow.
So we returned back to care for Ethan's father.
Yeah, that's the abbreviated story. But anyway, Almost Human. So we wanted to recreate, we wanted to refocus what we were doing, and I'd always wanted to name something Almost Human. I think that's where it comes from.
Almost.
It's like, you know, I sometimes wake up at night saying, God, that's a great name, Almost Human. You have to say it like, Almost Human.
Haunted by a band name.
It's true. He's been talking about it for years, actually.
Really? So it's been the back of his mind to...
So, we did it.
I finally gave in and said, okay.
So besides just loving the name, what aspect of what you're doing is Almost Human?
Is it an umbrella for certain nefarious activities?
Nefarious activities, yes, where we would hope at least. But the idea is that we channel science and environmental ideas to the general public. We use all our communication skills left over from visual effects. We work with filmmakers. We work with Kelly Kowalski from Pajama Girl Productions.
Oh, there's yes. Another great I met her through you guys.
Yeah. So we work with her. And the idea is to take all the amazing invention and technology that's happening in this area, you know, Santa Cruz and beyond, and channel that into a form that is really intuitive for people to understand. And so, you know, the main crux is that the future is becoming very obscure to a lot of people because they're not intuitively familiar with what is being invented and what is changing the world.
Sure. Used to be the bamboo curtain or the iron curtain. Now it's like the VR curtain or something.
Yeah, the VR, the biotechnology, the AI. And so what we can do with our set of skills to alleviate this problem is to make it more explainable for people and visual and interactive, too. We have a cool interactive technology.
Can you make deep fakes?
We actually could make all dimensions of fakes, shallow fakes, deep fakes.
No problem.
Yeah. Wakey fakes.
I see. It's an opportunity to create some parodies, comedic content here.
Yeah, sort of like that. Yeah.
So when people come down to HubX now, you've got a few screens that are full of very interesting artistic programs that you've been either developed in the past or that you're working on in the future.
Environmental, too, from what I've seen.
Right? And they're...
Yeah, actually, I'm going to fling it over to Miss Napoli sitting next to me right now, who will explain some of the Hub. Okay, she's hitting me.
It's your turn, Anne-Marie.
It's her. This is her first time on the radio, so have to be gentle with her.
Yes. But you can do it.
Yes.
Yeah, we all want to hear from you.
Tell us about one of your favorite projects. Yeah.
Well, I just want to retrace the past year. We did open up HubX, or this place we called HubX, and didn't really have a formed idea about what it is. We just wanted to have some lectures and sort of insight, interesting conversations, especially about climate or technology, how technology will enhance or not enhance the future. It was an idea that has been percolating more and more over the past year, and I finally decided to take it a step further and apply for nonprofit status. And that was an application that I thought was going to take at least a year, but it didn't. It actually took a couple months. I got my determination letter, so we have this nonprofit.
Like 501(c)(3).
501(c)(3).
And wow. So you guys are modeling climate situations, climate projects. How do you think about it?
We want to create this center, a media center based around technology, science, and art, open to anybody.
Like STEM education?
STEM. We're talking right now with a guy who has created this amazing map of connectivity to all of the sciences, and we're trying to figure out how we could apply this map to NGSS, the
Next Generation Science
Next
Standards.
Generation. I always want to say new generation, but it's Next Generation Science Standards. So that's actually a really exciting project. We're trying to work out some three-dimensional ideas for a tool.
You know what? We've got to go to a break.
Okay.
Hang tight.
Yeah. Right.
We'll be right back. Anything you want to say on our way out here, Dr. Future?
Yeah. I'm kind of interested in hearing more about what you're talking about with what can be done with this technology for making it more clear to people how things work. You know, how the body works.
And, yeah. You know.
All right. We'll be back. Dr. Future Show.
Yeah, so you're going to raise a little hell at Almost Human?
Let's get to heaven.
That's subhuman.
So you guys are right downtown, right near the Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
Would you consider yourself a drop-in center?
Dropout center?
Dropout. Yeah, maybe
dropouts drop in?
Yeah.
who would you like to see come over?
We're currently not quite drop in, but that's the idea, is to go that direction fairly soon, too. And so right now what we're doing is we're opening up the center to events. The first event, we actually have had Vince Allen was one of our first speakers, in fact.
Yeah.
Just about a year ago. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
So anyway, the new thing is that we're going to be doing events once or twice a month. And they're going to be advertised in all sorts of local venues, hopefully here, among other places. We have a website, thehubx.org.
Hubx.org.
Yeah.
Check it out here.
So check that out because all the events will be on there. And our first event coming up is going to be February 7th, and that's for First Friday. And that's going to be a kind of jamboree of media artists.
Mm.
Yeah, that's some of the first stuff we have. But as we are practicing over break, because nothing is unrehearsed here, we're currently teaming up with some really interesting things happening with the TED organization.
Yes, so, I think that's where we just reconnected with you at the Rio when TEDx was doing their thing last month.
That's right. That's right. And David Warren and a woman named Irene Holombro, they're both integral. They're both basically the organizers of TED in Santa Cruz here, and also involved with what we're doing at the Hub X. One of the things, just serendipitously, which happened is the TED organization has banded together with an organization called Drawdown.org. And Drawdown.org was created by Paul Hocking, environmental scientist, and Jonathan Foley, who was the ex-head of the Cal Academy. And what it does is it was basically a compilation of all sorts of different industrial environmental ideas that can help mitigate and combat climate change, you know, mm-hmm. from green roofs to anything. And what they want to do, what TED wants to do, is activate all their TEDx minions around the world, of which there's about 4,000, and have them put on community salons, events to help engage the communities that those TEDxes are in with these type of ideas to help get what's in the drawdown world out into the public in a way that's actionable. And so that's what we're going to become at the Hub X, is we're going to become a center for essentially climate engagement in Santa Cruz.
Cool.
And also to create action plans for what people can do to learn about climate change, and also what people can do in their daily lives or their families or communities to make the small and simple changes that are not going to reduce CO2 in the atmosphere entirely, but can make a difference.
Hmm. Now, how are you going to connect in with the other TEDx centers? Are you going to like have conference calls or video conference calls connecting up speakers and people around the world to have little gatherings? Or
That's fortunately, well, in terms of finding speakers, we have a plethora of people right here in Santa Cruz who are already very involved with climate change from a research angle or from an invention, innovation, industrial angle. Lots of people to draw upon. And it's always been a sort of an aspect of Santa Cruz. Lots of creativity, but people operate in little silos and pockets, and sometimes they don't know about each other.
So you kind of try to reach out into these pockets and pull them into the limelight, so to speak.
That's the hub aspect of
HubX. We're humbling them.
HubXing them.
Yeah.
Come on over here. We got a spoke for you.
One of the projects that we have been talking about at the Hub is to get some local youth in, teenagers, college students, and ask them, what would you like your future to be?
Mm-hmm. Get some vision out there, huh?
Get some vision out there and teach them how to interview, how to do cinematography, how to go out there and ask the right questions to their politicians or local activists, how to become activists themselves. So
that's true. There's not a lot of activist training schools out there for...
It's probably more a reaction than an action, but activist. We certainly have some resources to help focus the youth who want to make a difference, who want to see a better future, or just decide what their future wants to be, what they want their future to be.
So you'll have regular youth gatherings then as well?
I would like that. That's certainly something we've been talking about. And
so you'd be open to that. So if some youth approached you, you'd be
absolutely
open to talking to them about that sort of thing.
Yeah.
They walk by every day. We're right on the thoroughfare from Santa Cruz High to downtown where all the taco places are.
So, oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're easy
open
to, they're
the door
easy
and
find.
Say, hey, come in here. Yeah,
hey. Why don't
free taco.
You eat that
if you come
taco
in here.
Inside.
We
here.
Just put out a VR headset and a VR this way and just sort of walk right in.
Uh-huh. Well, that's the thing. Are you all concerned about the kids disappearing into the technology too much at all? A lot of parents are concerned these days about supposed addiction that might happen
in terms of, to Anne Marie's point just a second earlier about, sure. You know, giving these kids
an opportunity to learn
for,
about this.
Tools for activism, you know, yeah. And there's, clearly with Greta Thunberg and the stuff that she's instigating worldwide and others, there's a huge amount of youth energy, especially for trying to reverse the dire nature of our forecasts in the near future. What we think we can do here is give the community, and especially youth, tools to refine their action. Give them tools of media. Give them tools of knowing how to interview people, of knowing how to put pressure on local institutions and politicians in a way that is not just throwing rocks at buildings. Insofar as the technology aids in doing those things, we're all for it. As far as somebody spending 26 hours a day on their telephone playing games, that's kind of icky.
Mm. Right. So
you're kind of pro-social media, but anti-game addiction.
Anti-game addiction, some social media, but actually I think technology is really exciting, and I think that there are a lot of fun aspects to it that if it were presented to kids in a way that keeps them from becoming addicted to their phone or social media.
Mm-hmm. What's something that you really enjoy, Anne-Marie, with the technology? Virtual reality version of looking at the climate?
I'm more of a hands-on person, so I actually love to take things apart and put things back together. And I'm more of a physical, sculptural
tangible
person.
Like many people.
And
yeah.
So I would love to see kids in their creating robotics, and you have a question and it can be solved by creating a robotic arm. It's not specifically climate change, but...
Well, you know, I understand that. It's funny, I have a friend who has a six-year-old, and she says, as long as I give him a gift that has to do with his Legos, it will get incorporated. And there are Lego robotics kits.
That's true, yeah.
And Legos seem to now reach into everything. So why not combine the toys with the tools?
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, you know, the Erector Set approach, too, is really kind of something that we think a lot about at the Hub X, is how to break things down in creative pieces where people can start just by tinkering, putting together new ideas. And so in the same way you can tinker with solution ideas or mitigation ideas for climate change, you could also tinker with the fundamentals of AI or machine learning or biotechnological ideas. All sorts of things that can be broken down into visual tinker toy sets that people can play with. You know, that's really kind of what we want to create at the Hub. Get kids in there, get youth in there to start helping us invent what would be really fascinating for these type of tools.
Hmm. Yeah. So I'm picturing like when I've been to a maker fair and there are all these booths where there are basic benches set up with stuff that people can put together. And that might be something like building a circuit from spare parts, or it might be something like putting together some programmed modules of a little mobile unit that can be a robot that can maybe sense a wall and avoid it. And, you know, right? Is this the kind of play that you guys are promoting?
Somewhat like that. Somewhat. Also things like inventing your own pet or replacement for your sibling.
Yeah. It's sort of a combination think tank sandbox makerspace is what I'm envisioning.
Oh. I just want to comment from our friend Gabrielle in New Jersey right now. She says her daughter Angelina, who's like 17, I believe, and her friends talk regularly about not wanting to have children of their own. They seem to live in daily fear of climate and in the environment and in the politics.
Wow.
Yeah. So
it's true.
It is. There's a thing called climate anxiety now, and it's, you know, I think it's really infected people all around the world.
We're going to go for a break. It's 3:30.
We're going to come back and talk a little more about climate anxiety here on the Dr. Future Show.
We'll get the weather report first. This is the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show. We'll be back right after the break.
Hi, registered pharmacist Ben Fuchs here. I've been studying healthy bodies for 35 years, and what I've got to tell you may shock and surprise you, but if you listen up, it may change your life. The gallbladder is a little biological bag designed to hold bile in preparation for digestion of fats, and it's a favorite target for surgical removal. Over 500,000 of them are yanked out of patients' abdomens every year. Although doctors will tell you that you can live just fine without the bag of bile, as it turns out, nothing could be further from the truth. Bile is the key player in the processing of dietary fats, and while it's true that some of the fat-dissolving biochemical detergent can be squirted onto food directly from the liver, without a gallbladder, it's going to be much more difficult for the digestive system processing and absorption of numerous nutrients, including fats and essential fatty acids, vitamins, and thousands of plant chemicals that play a key role in health, healing, and anti-aging. In fact, without this little sack of tissue, you're going to run higher risks for pretty much any health condition you can name. Digestive issues, including gastritis and chronic diarrhea, are particularly likely, and not surprising possible side effect. So are skin issues like psoriasis and eczema, and you may have to deal with hyperpigmentation and accelerated aging too. Even cancer is on the short list for post-gallbladder removal misery. Best way to prevent gallbladder problems is to eliminate problem foods and improve digestion. Food intolerances are typically associated with gallstone formation. Using a good probiotic and eating fermented foods can be helpful. Consider lecithin and bile salts after fatty meals. And because gallbladder issues can impair the absorption of fatty nutrients, you're going to want to make sure you're supplementing with essential fatty acids, fatty vitamins, and minerals.
Okay, welcome back to the show, the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show. So where we're talking about climate anxiety,
yes. I think
was the topic that
Gabriella wrote in with her observations of young people, and I have had those same observations. We have basically created a generation of young people who have been educated to fear the weather. And, you know, before we were educating young people to fear the weather, everybody knew that the weather was unpredictable and that really smart people became meteorologists and tried to tell us how to predict the weather because farmers need to know that stuff. But now we have more tools than ever to try and predict the weather, and it really looks bleak. The kids are growing up thinking,
Yeah. And it is. It's a worldwide infection. And, you know, we have a teenager, and I think it weighs in on him and his friends for sure. One of the things we touched on earlier, this drawdown thing, and I grew up in Santa Cruz, too, and I was a teen in Santa Cruz. And you're right in the middle of a technological and academic hotbed, one of the world's hotbeds for these type of things. But just your average life as a teen in Santa Cruz is really kind of separate from that. You live in a bubble. And so growing up, wouldn't it be great if kids were to know about, if you had an interest in science and you're a kid, it's like, God, what do I do with this interest? I guess, you know, have to develop computer circuits or something. But there's also work being done in developing algae walls that develop oxygen. This is one of the drawdown ideas. So it's really this whole menu of different wonderful ideas that people can become involved with. And those things are being developed right around in this area, Silicon Valley, Santa Cruz, UCSC. It's crazy. So we want to connect the ends. We want to connect what's going on with academia and technology with all that searching, youthful energy and give youth a way of being not anxious.
So we have a template here. This whole drawdown book that Paul Hawkins wrote is really 50 solutions that you can implement yourself. And so you guys are inviting the locals to come and start teaming up to try out some of these solutions and learn the nuts and bolts.
Yep.
Amory, you were saying you were pursuing a particular grant, like you're going to open one of those specific doors.
Yeah, it's a project that I'm calling Nothing in Particulate, and it's a project to measure air quality to understand CO2 emissions from automobiles. And it's geared towards teens that are 15 and a half and older who are approaching driving age and just familiarizing themselves with their part of climate change as well.
Did your teenager start driving at the ripe old age of 16?
Oh, yeah. He was on it immediately.
Okay.
Because there's so many kids that don't these days. Maybe
that's
it's because
true.
Of the plethora of bikes and scooters and
well, we live outside of Santa Cruz a little ways,
you're up in
and
Bonnie Doon,
we're
right?
in Bonnie Doon, and
he was trapped. If he didn't get a car, you're not exactly the soccer mom kind of parents who'd take him to every whim of appointment that he wants to go to. Yep. Let him get there on his own, like the old-fashioned way.
He had to take the bus.
It was that or hang out with the parents.
Yep.
He could jump in your car if he was going where you're going, huh? Well, there you go. That's a novel solution. So the thing that you're recommending then is that these teenagers who have access to driving and are digital natives, so they're used to being on their phones all the time, they have this bad habit of sitting in their car while idling and using their phone and being parked so that they don't get a ticket. And you're saying that they could realize that that is actually a source of carbon pollution. They could leave the car off and text before they drive away. Right?
Sure. Or if they're chatting with their friends outside the school, or it would be an interesting project to really understand what they are contributing, how their own behaviors are contributing to climate change, and what they could do themselves or within their families, maybe even just go out into their communities and say, hey, let's actually make a program where we try to reduce our own footprint here.
Yeah, I think this is a really great idea. I remember talking to some people who were making some proposals for electric vehicles last year, and they cited a study of some of the freeways here in Northern California where people are sitting on the freeway in their cars in traffic for something like 40 minutes to an hour every day in their commute.
Yeah.
And this is a major source of health problems. It's giving them respiratory diseases.
Absolutely.
And so a valuable thing to study is, where is that happening here in Santa Cruz? What are our opportunities to interrupt that cycle?
Sure. And as we become more electric focused, or, you know, still there's a lot of combustible engines on the road, and maybe policies could be pushed to have better standards for new cars that do switch off. Yeah. Or just a more of awareness too with our
That's just practices. Is that the Hub X in its community engagement is a way that we can give a map of those type of policies and of those type of things that, you know, not only the things you can do at home to help climate change, but the things that you can push for, things that you can vote for, or if you're a kid, you can go to your local Home Depot and say, hey, you know, we don't want this, we want this other thing that's much better. Or maybe Home Depot isn't where you hang out, maybe it's a skateboard shop, but somewhere like that, you know, you could make your life, you can have it in the back of your head and being able to push for those larger changes.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it comes down to knowing what kinds of questions need to be asked.
What kind of questions need to be asked, and how, even just one person or in our families, what are the things that we can do? And I think that drawdown book and website really address some things that can be changed. And obviously, we're not going to change the world right now, but slowly over time, we can make a difference in our communities.
We got a question from you. Do you consider your space like a maker space?
I wouldn't say that it's a makerspace. It's more of an exploration space.
Exploration.
And that doesn't mean that we wouldn't make things there, but I just want to differentiate it from at least the makerspaces that I've seen, that I've visited. It's a little bit different than that.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I want to say we're not geared just towards youth. It's more broad.
The whole community.
The whole community, especially our evening salons we would like to have that are geared more towards some interesting dialogues about technology, about climate change.
Science.
And art. I really feel passionate about throwing art in there as well. I think that you have to be creative.
Yeah, I agree.
Sector.
I saw one really cool art project that kind of combined a lot of these things. This woman who designed this plant that was watered via the internet from people who tuned into the plant and were able to.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Social media, huh?
Yeah.
This plant's going to die if you don't give us a like right now.
Yeah, but first, you must learn how to do this equation, this form of programming. Do you have a lot of bandwidth there? Can you bring in experts in robotics, for example, from Stanford?
I think so, yeah. We've sort of been this default think tank for the past couple years.
Of your own crew there.
Of our own crew and just the networking that we've done. And it's really exciting the types of people that we have met and who do come in. Sometimes they drop in, sometimes we make arrangements, but really just trying to grow from that community into something that is more solid and routine.
Now, what makes HubX such a great place to study the environment? Don't you guys have some special expertise in software that's particularly useful for this kind of analysis and modeling?
Yeah, we have a lot of connections up at UCSC, especially with a large academic effort studying climate change that have been going on there for quite some time called ICIKI. So what we do, what the HubX is involved with and also Almost Human, is creating simulations that help people explore different ideas. And so climate change would be one of those things for sure. Like if you wanted to look at a visual simulation of what Santa Cruz traffic might look like if most of it turned electric, that's something that we can do. And certainly as part of our shindig at the Hub, we have a wonderful simulation scientist, Alex Lamb, who's going to be part of the picture. We're teaching kids courses in simulation, how to take ideas you have and make them things that you can actually explore almost in a game-like way, except that you're exploring information and science and, in essence, the future.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Turns out simulations work for games and reality.
Yeah.
Same data. Well,
yeah, we got another comment. It says, you could figure out ways to incentivize taking these measures, but if somebody created a program or a device that could somehow measure all of these positive behavior changes, then somehow create a reward system rather than a system of mandates.
Yeah, let's quit bossing people around. Let's pay them for being smart and cool and climate affirming.
She says, maybe people could actually see money back or something that is of value, because I don't think people could just be left up to their own devices to say, I need to save the planet, and here's what I'm going to do. Most people in our country and around the world aren't afforded such a luxury, either in their socioeconomic standing or in their understanding of ways.
Yeah, they're getting paid to destroy the planet. They're not getting paid to fix it.
Yeah, no, that's the golden question right there. And absolutely true is that most people worldwide are trapped in by circumstance, and so they're looking at things closer in to their own needs rather than long-term being 2 years or 5 years or 10 years even.
Not everyone's Greta.
So yeah, what are the rewards? What kind of rewards can we get from engaging in this behavior?
Well, for one, this goes back to drawdown again. All those ideas, and there's over 200 different sort of avenues.
It's at drawdown.org.
Drawdown.org, yeah, really worth a look. All those things basically are the backbone of green technology. Green technology is the biggest economic opportunity that this nation has ever had, any nation has ever had. It can be entirely transformative. And we're not jumping on it. So, yeah, planting a tree in somebody else's backyard is not necessarily going to benefit you this week in your house, but it's going to benefit you probably next month or maybe next year. So
you're going to have more air to breathe before you die.
Yeah.
Well, okay, we're going to be right back with a few more thoughts on how to enjoy climate mitigation with your community.
Ethan Summers and Anne-Marie Napoli from the HubX downtown Santa Cruz. All right, welcome back to the show. We're talking to Ethan Summers and Anne-Marie Napoli from HubX and Almost Human in downtown Santa Cruz on a number of topics, and especially what they'll be doing in their center over the next year. We have a caller, Mrs. Future?
We have a few. This is a popular topic for our folks here. Hello, Rory in Watsonville. Did you have some climate stimulation for us?
I did, and Happy New Year to you all.
Happy New Year.
Yeah,
thank you. The main evidence, if you can call it evidence, for man-made global warming is all based on mathematical models that are projecting. They've been doing this since the late 90s.
What about the fires in Australia?
Wait a minute. So this is all modeling. There's zero empirical data for man-made man-made is the key for anthropogenic.
Oh, well, we're not debating that here.
I know, but you know what? It's inconvenient. You guys are sitting there just throwing this stuff out. You're responsible for creating anxiety in our youth with the lies that you guys are pushing. Now, I've got 9 kids, and I'm telling every one of them, they all want to get married. I have 7 girls, 2 boys, and some are married. Some already have kids. I'm saying don't listen to these BS artists because they're trying to rob your future. You have a life to live, and going from 280 parts per million carbon dioxide to 400 does not create disasters. Now, I don't know what's going on in Australia. You got to understand that a eucalyptus tree is described as a halophile. It needs fire to scarify the seed, to germinate the seed. Now, maybe they've been doing irresponsible forest management over there. I don't know. But our climate is pretty dang regular, and it's not too hot, and it's not too cold. I track degree day hours for farming. I'm in the botanical sciences. So anyway, I won't take all your time, but there are other opinions out there. And the petition project, if anybody wants to check it out, is still online. Just look up petitionproject.org.
Okay, yeah, we'll take a note of that.
Yeah, we might not have as many disagreements as you think. There was the things that you were advocating.
The main thing is to look at it and look at it in a more conscious way. You know, we really need to analyze. We don't want to soil our own nest, right? So we want to avoid that as much as possible.
Also,
there also is a lot of things in terms of getting our act together in terms of preserving the environment and hence reducing climate change that are also just better for everyone in general.
I'm all for that. I'm not just conservation, keeping things clean.
Yeah, I'm not going to get on your case for driving a F-150. Anyway.
All right. We got some other folks, Roy. Okay. Appreciate your call. Glad you're listening. Thanks. And are you guys ready for David in San Francisco planting trees?
What?
Okay.
What's that?
Yeah.
Well, we're going to go to another caller, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, thank you. I'll keep listening.
Thanks, Roy.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Hello, David. Welcome to the show.
Oh, yeah. Howdy, y'all. Yeah, absolutely. I think what they say now is that the smartest thing that humans could do with climate change is to plant more trees. Mm-hmm. And that previous caller is dead wrong. The California farmers, especially in the Central Valley, have known for, 15 years that the snow melt, the snowpack in the mountains is not sticking around. And it's the same in Colorado.
Yep.
And in fact, in the East Coast, where snowstorms are now turning into sleet storms. And so now people are getting piles of ice up on their roofs. It's caving in their roofs. It's ripping their gutters off. It's causing all sorts of architectural damage. And the Pentagon, as long ago as 2006, has now started to have to guard what was the mythical Northwest Passage. Mm-hmm. We can now run ships north of Canada all the way over to the Bering Strait, and it's happening more and more often that ships are going through there for commercial traffic. That previous caller is just dead wrong. The evidence is there. Whether or not it's pollution is beside the point. It is existing. And architectural standards are going to have to change. What I was going to raise with the planting trees issue is that if you remember 10, 20, 30 years ago when you bought a packet of seeds, they said, they had a little map on it to show which area was the best to plant them in. I mean, was this a northern plant or was it a southern plant or a temperate climate?
Mm-hmm.
Those zones are now changing. And if you go to the seed packets of 30 years ago, they're different than the same type of seeds in the packets today because those climate zones are changing. And so I'm wondering, you do have a guest that's knowledgeable about trees, right? I'm just wondering if he's familiar with these temperate zones and how...
Yes, we actually do. We've been working closely with a guy at UCSC, him and his gang, Barry Sinervo, and he's an evolutionary biologist, climatologist, climate scientist, and has been specifically studying the future of California climate over the next 50 years. And a lot of that has to do with changing temperate zones and how that affects animals and plants.
Right,
So, yeah, I think that we don't want to be debating the small stuff in terms of what is the cause. We more want to be debating what is the best way to handle the local climate issues and what are the local climate issues. And planting trees seems to be a good solution no matter what you think is causing it.
Right, yeah. If you look at a tree, it's 90% water or 85% water or whatever. And if it's a 50-foot tree, that's 50 feet of a lot of water stuck up in the air that's not coming down in rain, it's not in the ocean. And if the oceans are going to start to rise, we better get a whole bunch of living water poles sticking up in the air.
I totally agree. Tree planting is, and there's a lot of different sources that would agree with you on this, that tree planting is like the number one accessible thing that can be done worldwide to combat climate change, especially in places like the Amazon. But looping back around to our local community and what we're concentrating on with the hub, and yeah, we're definitely part of the bigger picture. But with this local community, what we want to do is we want to provide especially a way for youth. I mean, there's a lot of energy out there already. We want to give them better tools and better information so that they can go out there and really create the future that we want to see. Also, Santa Cruz, just so much opportunity here that's not being connected to so many wonderful things, so many wonderful opportunities, irregardless if you believe climate change is real or not, and I hope you do, but if you don't, there's still wonderful opportunities that come out of drawdown ideas that can be implemented and people could make money even.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, back on the East Coast, you know, you saw all those old postcards or something like that from a couple of hundred years ago where people were ice skating on the pond. Well, in the scientific version of that, that pond has to freeze solid at 5 degrees or lower for, I think it's 3 days straight before it's safe enough to get the whole town ice skating on it. Mm-hmm. And you go to the weather of the last 30 years, there haven't been 5 days straight of 5 degrees below in very many towns. I used to live in Colorado just 30 years ago, and there was only one time in the last 30 years that I knew that it was safe to ice skate on a pond out there.
Mm. Yeah. Hey, thanks for your call and your information here. We're going to jump back in. We will have precious minutes here.
We want to plug 2 minutes. Yes.
Yeah. Anne-Marie, you want to give us a plug for the Hub X? And, you know, by the way, we're a nonprofit.
Yes, 501(c), right? And yeah, so tell us about what's coming up for you in the near future.
We are looking for help. We would love some financial help. We have a GoFundMe right now. You can access it from our website, thehubx.org.
Thehubx.org.
That's okay. Correct. We're also looking for people who would volunteer with us. We're specifically looking for some college students, Cabrillo College or UCSC students who would like to come and help me write up some project ideas. And we're also always courting people in the tech industry who would like to come and volunteer to help orchestrate some of those projects.
Mm-hmm. So teach kids and...
Or speak at some of our salons.
And speak at some of our
salons. If you have
salons.
Some knowledge that you want to share with the community,
absolutely.
You're a place to do that, huh?
Yeah.
Fantastic. Okay, well, thanks again. Can you give us your website one more time?
It's thehubx.org.
Thehubx.org. Okay, thank you. Thank you both, Anne-Marie Napoli and Ethan Summers, for being our guests today. I appreciate it.
And we're looking forward to seeing you on First Friday on February 7th.
Yeah.
And why don't you give everybody the address?
We're at 312 Lincoln Street, and that's right across from the Boys and Girls Club, right across from the gymnasium on Lincoln Street, and we're the whole bottom floor of 312 Lincoln Street.
312 Lincoln. Okay, when are you open, usually?
Well, we're usually there during the days, but this event's going to be around 6 on the 7th.